Today, I welcome Mary Show to my In Conversation With podcast for women in jazz media. Mary is a singer, songwriter, visual artist hailing from Southeast London with a Nigerian heritage. Hello, Mary. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I think we should say Happy Valentine's Day.
Oh, I don't celebrate Valentine's Day. but happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah. Why don't you celebrate the hit? Why don't you celebrate it?
I just don't buy into it. I think there was maybe like 6-7 years ago, I was just like, I just don't buy into it, and I don't want to feel like that I don't matter if I don't have a Valentine's or not, or if I am in a relationship, that if they don't do, you know, I just took that pressure off, and like I just treat it as a normal day.
Yeah.
I just treat it as a normal day.
I have a WhatsApp group with three of us who are very good friends, and we sent each other a happy Valentine's message, and we're just girls. We're just like,
oh,
nice. So I guess that's how I treat it, really. And yeah,
every day is Valentine's Day.
Yeah, self love, hey.
Yeah, defo, big on that. Yeah.
So, how has 2024 been for you so far? What have you been up to?
Should I give the honest answer, or should I know? What have I been up to? Where are we now? So it was February the 14th. I have been focusing on how I'm going to push this album out. And I think I may have gotten into a little bit of a, you know, let's, sorry, flight, fight and freeze. I think I might have gotten into a bit of a freeze mode with analysis paralysis. So I've just been like, okay, so what do? I need to do some content, right? Too tired. I'm working 9 to 5. Okay, but I've got some gigs coming up. So yeah, I've got rehearsals to look forward to. Yeah, but you really should do some content. Yeah, no. What should be my angle? I'm not really sure. Like, I've just been going back and forth with myself. So I've got a gig coming up in Feb and one in March. So I'm just kind of using those as like my North Stars, just to focus on the music. And I really want those shows to be like sold out, packed out. That's like my focus. All the other stuff around promoting the album, I feel like I've got a few ideas. I just need to actually do them. And then another side to me, I've just been working because money for me, and just been doing a lot of overtime. I know it's not glamorous, is it, guys? It's not glamorous. But it's just that money just needs to go. It's just to help with music and trying to just live in London, you know? So that's like my honest answer. And I'm also like, I feel like I'm about to like shift sonically with my sound. Mm-hmm. I've like got some new music that is like ready to be an EP. And I'm just thinking about how to go about it. And I do, thanks to Women in Jazz, I did have a studio session with Gilberto. And I've got like another one with him. So we kind of finished up one track. And then, yeah, I just want to go in and like do another one. So that was one of the benefits of winning the Women in Jazz fund last year. So, yeah, so that's it, long and short of it.
So the album you mentioned about promoting, is that the one that's out now, Woman Rising?
Yeah, Woman Rising, yeah. So it came out late last year, and what happened was, because I just think I should just be really honest, is I was feeling a little bit burnt out last year, towards the end of last year. So what happened was, I, as soon as I finished like my last gig, which was at South Bank, I literally was like, I don't want to think about music. I don't want to talk about music. I just was like, ugh. But then I also released my album that same day. So I was literally just like, yeah, I've released my album. Then I was like, okay, bye. I'm going on holiday. And I did. I went to Greece. And I just didn't want to, I just didn't want to be Mary Show. I just wanted to exist and like be present, because there was so much like pressure, like the album and gigging and this, and I was just beat. And now that I'm back, I'm just like, it's out there. I'm happy about that, but we need to push it. So yeah, that's where I'm at now.
I love the artwork on it, by the way. Looks great.
Well, thank you.
Okay, yeah,
Thanks.
love that. So the you were saying about your sound. So the sound on this current album that's recently out, you think that you're already having a kind of journey to a new vibe, are you? Because that was quite groove based, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a accumulation of like soul, jazz, funk, even elements of rock. Just yeah, it's just how my brain is. Like, I've been influenced by so much, you know, jazz, R&B, hip hop, musicals, film scores, classical music. So in my brain, when I'm making music, it's just, I just make it. And it's like one track in particular, No Time, it's got like the verses is like almost like trap music. It's got the 808, it's got that bounce. But then as soon as you get to the chorus, you're going into like full on rock. But then when you get to the bridge, you're going into like MJ, like R&B. So that track just takes you on one hell of a journey, and that's just how my brain is. And I'm like, if it works, it works. Like, it's a great song to sing because it tricks you into thinking it's going to be something else, and then it flips it on its head, and then you think it's going to end a certain way, and it ends the opposite way. So yeah, that's just how I've always been. My music's always been. And even with the new music I'm making, it still has all of those elements, but there's something, the best way to describe it, I don't know how you'll receive it, but the best way to describe it, it's like similar to the music I'm making now, but this one is just it's very British. It's like exploring like my more of my British heritage. So yeah. And I'm still trying to figure out what that means, but there's something that's just very like, because the EP that I'm currently working on explores like my upbringing, and I was born here, even though I'm from Nigerian descent, but I was born here. So there's like a, because you know how when you listen to people that make music in America, and like say R&B in America sounds very different to R&B in the UK, right? And it's just, I feel like I'm like embracing that a bit more. It will all make sense when it comes out.
What is part of the artist development, you could say, isn't it? I mean, if we can't always, it's weird, isn't it? Because when you start off in music, you're probably quite young and you're trying different stuff out, and you're constantly developing as an artist and on the journey. And it feels sometimes feels weird looking back at what you released before or what's coming up because everything changes.
Yeah,
That's part of
and
it,
that's,
isn't it?
it's part of it. And I remember when I first started doing music, I was very pop. I was very electro pop, probably because of the what I was listening to at the time. And then I became more experimental. Like, my music was had a lot of space in it, and then taking me right up to this project where I would say the music is quite full and colorful, and more, there's just so many layers and textures to it. Even how I sing on every track is slightly different, you know. And I used to think that was a bad thing, because I remember someone told me, like, but they need to know it's you when you're singing. I'm like, well, it's still my voice, but maybe for like No Time, I'm more like, got no time. Or but then like for like Black Girls, I'm like, you know. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm changing the dynamics of my voice, but isn't that like the beauty of making music, that I can like change my, tap into a different part of my vocal range or character? You know, I don't want to sound the same on every track. So yeah, I feel like this album definitely explored that, because every track is different, but I feel like you still know it's me. It's still all tied in together.
I think if every track vocally, or for me, saxophony, even though that isn't a word, sounded the same, it would sound like you're very insincere. Like every tune you've written is an emotion, an experience, and it's part of you, and therefore it's not all going to sound the same. You weren't wearing blue denim in the same experience, you know, like everything is different, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of play and experimentation and something turning from play to experimentation into a full-fledged song that you then perform with a band, and then the band interprets it a different way. And it's just so cool. Like there's some versions, even that version of No Time, speaking of that track, there's a version that me and my band we perform, and it's completely different. It's got more of like a salsa element. And then there's one version that's more inspired by Minnie Riperton and Marvin Gaye. And it's more like woody. It's got like like cajon and a bit of percussion, and then like over. There's the over kind of where it's like Afro or say Afro funk with like a bit of disco. But then there's a version which I call like the fella version, which is like really tapping into that spirit of fella with the harmonies and getting some male vocalists on there to give it that real bass and depth. So I love doing that. I love even when I've got a version of a track, I will pull it apart and make a different version. Like there's a very 80s funk version of Black Girls. But then there's like a acoustic version, which when we were making it, I said to the bassist, I was like, just think Thundercat. Just think Thundercat, maybe put some like effects on the bass, make it really like harmonic and like reverby, and if that's a word. And we came up with this version, which people love. And yeah, it's great. That's the beauty of it. Everything else I'm not interested in, but I just want to make music. All the other stuff that comes with music, but yeah.
So you said you've got a gig coming up on the 29th of February. Where's that?
That's at the Lower Third on Denmark Street. So that's near Tottenham Court Road. So Denmark Street, that whole district, they're trying to make it like what it was back in the kind of 60s and 70s, like the hub of music, all the guitar and music shops and everything. So there's two new venues there. There's here at the Altonet, and then there's the Lower Third. So my gig's in the Lower Third. And then within the Lower Third, there's a more intimate space called the Forge. And that's where I'm going to be performing. So it's going to be stripped back, me and my guitarist, and I'm being supported by an R&B duo called MVM, Mutsu and Ravimbo, and yeah, they are amazing. And they're going to be joining me on a few songs too. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. First gig of the year, so a tinge nervous, but I know as soon as I, it's always like that. As soon as I step on that stage, as soon as my guitarist Addy starts playing, I just feel so at home. I just want to stay there. And when it's over, I'm just like, oh, let me do that again and again every day.
And what's the capacity of that venue?
That capacity is about 60,
Right,
but
nice.
the lower third is about 250. So I was speaking to the event organizers, and I just thought it'd be great to start off with the Forge, and then I would get myself booked in at the Lower Third, maybe sometime in like early spring, summer, or yeah, early spring, late spring. Yeah.
Nice. I think I really like small gigs actually, like 60 to 80, because it feels really intimate and it feels like everybody's with you,
Yep.
and you can kind of tap into the audience, and often they just have such a great time, and it's a really great to speak to them afterwards because they're like, oh, I really felt that one, or, you know, and I
Yeah.
sometimes small gigs are the best.
Yeah. And I just thought it'd be a great way to like ease myself in. There wasn't the pressure of getting the whole band together. Although I love that. Like sometimes I used to be like, it's the band or nothing. But Mary, the stage is shh, the band or nothing. But now I'm just like, I'm getting used to it just being me and a guitarist. And I love that even more. I feel like I can really show myself because it's not that you hide behind a band, but there's just so many things going on, so many elements. But when it's just you and the guitarist, it's so raw. And just sonically, it just gives the songs a different feel, you know? And it stretches my guitarist too. Because, you know, listening to like a complex song, like, I don't know, they're all complex, aren't they? But like anything, like maybe White Lies. And it's like, right, how are we gonna take all of electric guitar, drums, this, that, 5-part harmony, and then just strip it down to you and I? It's a challenge, and I love doing stuff like that.
So how many rehearsals or sessions do you go kind of have to prepare for that, where it's just stripped back because you need to get all that information in?
So normally when we're like on a street, we only need about like one rehearsal, one long rehearsal. But because we haven't, our last gig was in November, we're gonna have two. I'm actually having one today, but this is more just to go through vocals for a particular track. I won't spoil it, but yeah, if you come to my gig, guys, you'll find out that I will be joined by some special people or special person. And this one, I said to Addy, I was like, let's have two rehearsals so we really can like get comfortable with each other again. He's coming off a tour, so he's gonna, I need to like get that out of him. Like, you're with me now, you're mine. So yeah, two 4-hour rehearsals. Yeah, so
And
we're doing.
how did you meet him? How did you kind of
Oh, so
get together?
I did a gig the year before at Coco Camden, and the organizers, I love this because it really takes the pressure off artists. They were like, we're gonna supply one band for all the artists, so they're just gonna learn your songs. And I just remember the first rehearsal, I think only he could make the first rehearsal, so all the artists were just meeting up with him to play the guitar, just go through the songs, go through the structure. And I just loved the way he played. I was like, oh my God, he gets it. And then we did that gig together, and I just reached out to him and I was like, hey, do you mind playing? Are you free for this gig and then this gig? And then he just played with me all throughout last year. And it's just so great to see him blossom. He's going on tour. I can't remember the name of the artist, but I know he's playing with Bastille Petit. He's quite a like a well-known bassist on like social, but he's very, you know, respected. And then Jerome Johnson, who's again in certain circles, he's, you know, quite a respected drummer. So that trio is gonna be fire. So I'm so happy with him. I mean, so happy with him and for him, and yeah, just to see him grow. Yeah. And it's nice because the musicians always say, because sometimes I'm like, guys, is this too complicated? Guys, is this too much? And they're always just like, no, your songs stretch us. I'm like, okay, good. They're like, yeah, your songs stretch us because, you know, it's not covers, it's not, you know. Yes, it stretches us. It gets us to have to really think about how we're gonna interpret this for live music. Yeah.
So, how do you go about writing a song? What's your process?
Okay, it's a good question. So I have a couple, but one of them is I will hear a track. The producer could not even be halfway through it. Maybe it's even just a drum pattern. But if I connect to that, like rhythmically, lyrics will just come. And whatever's been brewing inside of me, whatever's been on my mind, whatever wants to reveal itself, will just come out from speaking about any topic. I don't even think about it. I just start singing, and then I'll be like, oh, that's what was inside me. Okay, cool. And then what happens is I'll do like a freestyle. I'll just be like, let's just go. Let me, I've got something. And he'll just start recording, and then I'll hear that back, and then we'll start really fleshing it out properly, trying to make sense of it, trying to like tidy it up. And then sometimes another way is the music and the lyrics will just come to me at the same time. So I have voice notes where I'm just beatboxing, and so I can take that to the studio and be like, this is how I want the bass line to sound. Bum bum ba dun dun dun. Da, 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 whatever, whatever, and I want like harmonies, like really euphoric, and like, you know, and I'll do the harmonies, and then I'll do like one verse, and then I'll probably finish the rest of the song in the studio, and the thing is with that, you just have to make sure you're working with like really good producers. I love producers that can play instruments because they make it easier. I assume the ones I've worked with, most of them at least play like two instruments, either keys or bass or guitar and keys. Most of them play keys, so that it makes it the process easier when you give them a beatbox or something, and they're like, they can interpret that. So that's my process. And then when I have like a collection of songs, and I decide, okay, is this like an EP? Is this going to be a full body of work? That's when I really start like thinking about the master plan. Like, what is this all about? Like, what is the what's the season? And when I did Women Rising, when I was reviewing all the songs, I was talking to the producer, Khalil Madovi, and I was like, these songs are all about like womanhood and the things that I have been battling and the things that have been like just on my mind, and you know, whether it's my size, you know, big girls, all my girls is to do about like body image and where I how I'm placed in society because of how I look. You know, black girls is the obvious one. It was just an ode to like my sisters, and you know, White Liars was just about like like structural oppression, like being a black creative trying to navigate a system that is not built to support you, you know, and if you do, sometimes you feel like the token. So it was just touching on all these issues, and but there wasn't like a, and that's why I put the rise in, because it didn't feel like, when you listen to the album, I don't walk away feeling like sad or down in the dumps. I feel empowered. Do you know what I mean? Because there is hope. Things are changing. Things are moving. So, yeah.
Nice. It's interesting to see how different people write.
It's a long answer I just gave.
Love it. So when so you so you've got this, you've got your body of work, you've got your gig coming up, and then what do you feel, what's inside of you to kind of make sure that people hear about the gig and you feel happy with the preparations? Like, do you feel the pressure to try and promote it yourself? How does that work?
Yeah, one of the banes of being an artist, I don't know how, actually I do know how other artists feel because I talk to them. And even the other day, Kyra, she posted something and she was like, imposter syndrome, and I don't really like doing social media. And she talks about juggling motherhood, and now she's got two kids, and then she's got a headline show. And I was reading the caption, I was like, this girl gets it, man, because some of us are just not built like that. Like, because we put so much into our music, when we're done, it's like running a marathon. So we're like, oh, okay, cool, right, what do I do now? And then when you look at all the things you've got to do, you're just like, what? That's a whole nother job. What do you mean? I wrote the damn song. Like, I did all the vocals. I did the 10 stems for this one line. Is there more? And it's like, and then it's true. Like, if you are balancing like a 9 to 5 and you are balancing family life or whatever, it is challenging. And one of the things is that word is called content. It's called pushing. You got to push the gig. And when you see that email, I'm like, hey guys, just a quick message. We really just need to push the gig. And I'm like, no, you push the gig. I'm already doing the work by singing at the show, right? I'm going to the rehearsal with the band. I'm working on my own performance. I'm MDing a band by myself. I'm pushing it within myself. Why don't you push the... But obviously, that's just like my thoughts. And then I just go, yeah, sure, great, yeah. And then now I'm just like, all right, got to make some content. And sometimes I had a real problem doing that. Like I used to, well, not used to, for this project, I made about four visuals, five visuals for this project. That was like blood, sweat, and tears. I mean, like no budget, no 10-man crew. It was just me, a DP. I did all the styling, the directing, the mood board, the everything. So again, it's that thing, you run that marathon, you put all your effort into this visual, thinking, yeah, this is the visual that's gonna push the music. And then it kind of does it, but then it doesn't. And then you look back and you go, oh, like. You kind of just feel like, what is the point of all of this? Like, how does this work? And then you go into like, okay, maybe I just need to pay for marketing. And you pay for a bit of marketing, you boost your post, you start speaking to a PR company, but then maybe they're quoting like a couple of grand for like one song. So you're just like, okay, is this worth it? Because I still need to like pay my, I think it's just so many factors and I could go on and on about it. But I think the crux is you as an artist, you just need to find your flow, like what comes naturally to you and just try and like capitalize on that. So if you're a bit of a talker, which I am, which you can tell in this podcast, I'm talking a lot, maybe just use that to your advantage, like talk to people. If you're like more of a visual person and you like pictures, maybe it's just images, and then the other side to that is just, yeah, just emailing the right people. That's a whole nother thing. Honestly, Hannah, I could go on. Like sometimes also like London can be very gatekeeperish. Like people don't share stuff. Like I wish there was like an up-to-date like a contact sheet. Where like any artist, when they get booked for a gig, they just slap that email and the contact on this thing, and like it's like a Google Drive that everyone just has access to. Obviously, you're vetted, you need to be like a real artist, not just some weirdo that wants people's emails. And because sometimes I'll be like, oh, that person got that gig, and then you're a bit shy to be like, oh, how did you get that? Because I emailed them and I didn't get a response. But sometimes you're a bit like, oh, I don't wanna, do you know what I mean? Or you ask and then you get really vague answers. Oh yeah, I just emailed them. And I'm like, no, but what was the email? Sorry, what was the name? Yeah, it's just just send them a. And you're just like, ah. But that's going into a whole nother thing. I'm waffling on, but that question just brings up so much about the other side to pushing and promoting your music and pushing and promoting your gigs when you don't have like a machine behind you, when you don't have like management or a label or like a tour manager or something, even like a social media assistant. When you don't have any of that, it just becomes so many things. And yeah, it can get really like draining. And all you want to do is just make your music and perform and share it with people.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I'm nodding in sympathy here. It's tough being an independent artist.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the people who do support us, we really appreciate it.
Yes, 100.
Because you are really, really, you're really, really helping us. Like there isn't anybody else helping us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm just hoping that there will be a point where I can have like a small team. I think that's like the goal, like
Yeah.
small team, even being part of like a label, like a night like a independent label that really care about the artists. Like I was talking to you about this before we started getting into it. And one of the artists that I just find that every now and then there's always that artist that you're just like, I don't get how. And that artist is Cleary Soul. Now, Cleary Soul, she like posts like very infrequently, like, and sometimes what she'll do, she'll delete all of her posts and then she'll start again when there's like a new project. She'll go back to zero pictures and then she'll just post like a clip of this song and song track two, song three, like whatever, and just pictures. And then, I was just, 'cause I was observing her social media, especially when she came out with Winter Songs, which is such a classic to me. I love that EP. And I just was like, who's her machine? And then I was Googling away. And the label she's with is like Forever Living Records, I believe. She's still with them. And I was just looking at such a small label, and I'm just like, how are they doing this? Like, she literally can just live her life and then like do these gigs. She doesn't gig often either. Like, she had the one big gig that was at XOYO before it changed, I think. And then the one last year at the Royal Albert Hall, which I went to, which was just phenomenal. It was a unforgettable night. She is just incredible. I love her. And I just was thinking, like, how does she do this? You know, I would love to just like post once a month and then still sell out the Royal Albert Hall. But obviously, I know there's definitely mechanics behind it, but maybe it's done in a way, done in such a way she doesn't have to do, she can just really focus on the music. And maybe there is the machine behind her that is really dealing with the building traction, getting her on playlists, getting her to the right DJs, all of that stuff, you know. I would just love the curtain to be pulled back so we could just see how it all works. Like, I would love to a day in the life of Clear Soul's manager. Like, I just want to know, like, if they've got any tips or, but and at the same time, what makes her so appealing is the mystery. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
There's a lot of inside industry secrets that I think we will never know. I
Yeah.
hope. Yeah. If you find out, you'll have to let us know, Mary.
Ah, this is a secret black book. Guys, I cracked into their infrastructure. I know everything. But yeah, it would be nice to know, because these things are really practical. Like, and there's so many people, I just look at them and I'm like, okay, how did they do that? How do they get that? Because you have this thing with like emails, like, oh, email, I think I'm emailing the right person, I just won't hear back. Then I'll email again. Then I'll try and find another way. And I'll be like, how does everyone do this? Like, and then it will make you like maybe doubt yourself, like maybe I'm not what they're looking for, or, and then there's other factors. There's so much. Like, and I don't know if I'm have some kind of neurodivergence, but sometimes I'm like, it can be really like paralyzing. You're just stuck in like, I don't know what to do. How do I do this? But when I'm on stage and when I am gigging, I don't care about all of that stuff. And I just wish I could do that like all the time. Yeah.
So when you are on stage, how do you get the audience on your side? What do you do?
I always make sure the first song really captures your attention sonically. I don't like to start off with like subtle tracks. When we performed at the Women in Jazz showcase last year, there was like a song that we did, which was something we made up in rehearsal, and it was just like a it reminds me of kind of like a rodeo. I can't explain it, but it was like Addy was just playing around on the guitar. He was like, dun, 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 dun. And then, like, Jerry comes in with the bass. I can't do the bass right now because I can't remember it, but yeah. And then I just was like, black girls, dun, 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 black girls. And I was just like, let's do that for our intro. Like, that's just like something that will command attention. So I normally pick something that will grab the audience's attention sonically, like something, or I will, whatever track I perform, I will speak after the first track. Because I used to do a bit of comedy, I used to do a bit of, like, I used to host events, and I wouldn't say stand-up comedy, but I used to like dabbling comedy and stuff, and I kind of use that to my advantage when I have like a headline show or I've got like a really long set, because I just talk to people, I make jokes, you know, sometimes I even like get the audience to interact with the track. I'll use them as the chorus. There was one gig I did at Brixton Soho. It's just such a shame that that venue doesn't exist anymore, because I felt like they were onto something, but hey ho. And my BVs, they were doing a gig for Channel 4, like, bless them. And it was really tight. I always knew it would be tight. Then I got that dreaded call of, like, we're still filming. I was like, no. I was like, I need you guys. And I was panicking. And I was like, oh my God, like, I need the BVs. Like, the audience, they need to hear all that, all the sonics and everything and the emotion. And then, like, my friends that were there, they were just like, girl, you got this, man. Just sing your song. But I used the audience to help me sing over, and I taught them the chorus. And I don't, and I never really did that. But from that gig, I started doing that going forward. Like, when I've got like a set and I've got time, it's not just a quick 15-minute set. When it's like a good half an hour set, when it comes to that song, I love to do a call and response, and I love to teach them the chorus. And if I'm blessed enough to even like split up them into some harmonies. So it's one way I get the audience on side. Yeah.
And when you're not performing and on that high, and you're not doing any social media, how do you chill out?
How do I chill out? I wish I was a lot more exciting, but I normally just like, I rest. Like, I do nothing at home. Like, I just rest, whether it's just like just watching something interesting. Like, I'm such a documentary person. I'm such a true crime documentary person. The last thing I watched was The Stalker, The Killer, The Lover on Netflix. And I just get into stuff like that. Or I like to just, I either go to like other gigs, whether it's 91 Brick Lane, or it's Tams and Elephant and Castle. Or I love going to like preview screenings of like certain films. Like, I got to get into the preview screening of American Fiction, with a group. They're called We Are Parable, and they're really cool. You just sign up and you get to apply for like free tickets to get the preview screenings of certain,
Oh,
and
nice.
sometimes they have like, yeah, or Bounce Cinema is like another one that I'm part of, and they do really cool events. There was one Q&A they had. I think it was actually, this was during lockdown. It was with Steve McQueen. And that was really cool, because you're just in a Zoom call with Steve McQueen and like a few other people. And yeah, so it's things like that. Anything that can kind of stretch me that is like non-music related. It's just nice to kind of have a breather from that and then go back into music. And then if it's not that, I'm like making music, just experimenting. I'm trying to stretch my producer muscle this year, because the EP that I was telling you about, it's all self-produced.
Right.
Can't play any instruments, but I use the loops. But it's not what it sounds like. Like, there's real instrumentation in there, but they're loops, if that makes sense. And what I'm doing that currently is taking that into the studio and, building it back up for it to sound more authentic. But yeah, that's it
Cool.
really. Yeah.
Sounds amazing.
Thanks.
So we're coming to the end of our chat today. It has been really lovely to speak to you, and I hope that the gig goes well on the 29th of February.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I
It's
have.
free, just to make a note, it's free.
Okay.
Yeah.
So do go and check out Mary's show, and then you'll see the details for the gig on there, I'm sure. I have two Hannah questions for you at the end, Mary.
Okay.
So the first question is, do you know what Desert Island Discs is? Do you know that radio show? I'll tell you. So basically, a famous person is interviewed, and they have to pick tracks that have meant something throughout their life. And at the end, they can pick one track to take to their desert island that they're kind of abandoned on. You can have a whole album. What would be your favorite album that you would keep forever?
Oh my gosh, that is so such a okay. Oh my gosh. I'm so torn. I'm gonna go for like, okay, I'm just gonna go for Michael Jackson's Thriller.
Good choice.
Yeah. I don't think I'd ever get tired of that record. I'm just, yeah. Yeah, I'm
Okay.
gonna go with that. There's others, but let's just go with that, yeah.
And then the next question. What is your favorite time signature? Do you like to be in three or four? What do you like to what write in? What's your favorite kind of time that you prefer to sing in?
Oh, I've never thought of that question. Probably four.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say four because I listened to your stuff. Yeah, thought you were going to say four.
Okay, that's I've never had that question before. That's so cool.
It's because I'm a real geeky musician, so I really like to know these things.
Oh my gosh, I'm gonna ask that to other musicians when I like chat to them.
Yeah.
Okay. Great question.
So thank you again for coming on the podcast today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been fun. Like, I hope I didn't waffle too much, but it's always nice to have a chat about these things that you don't often get a platform to talk about them in depth like this and for this long. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been lovely. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this podcast for Women in Jazz Media. We have a great back catalogue of podcasts from amazing women, including Claire Martin, OBE, Joe Harrop, Jay Steps, and many more. Please do check them out, and I'll see you at the next one. Bye.